Welcome to the bonus Q&A for episode 72.
Hi.
That's 8 times 9 if you didn't know.
I didn't
know. 72. Uh-oh. We're going to do math first thing. Got it?
I can't do math.
Are you freaked
out?
Last
thing. I can't do math.
Are you scared? Yes. Okay. First question is from Paul Gale. Hey, Kit and Krista, who are a couple of guests you'd like to have on a future podcast of yours? Be the picks realistic or not, any thoughts on the second half of 2023? Thank you.
Yeah, we've been a little lazy on our guests, I think. I don't know what happened. I think we just got kind of busy. But yes, I think we're due for some guests. We have a short list of guests already. I think Chris Kohler has been on our list for a long time. We want him to come and talk about the Mr. Miyamoto retirement interview. So that's one that we're hoping to get on relatively soon. Who else was on our
show? There's one that is in your court that is honestly a gigantic badge of shame for you. Producer Stephanie. I cannot believe that we have gone this far without having her on. People ask for her regularly.
I know.
You are the conduit to Producer Stephanie. What is your beef with her?
No beef. Producer Stephanie had like a sad life event recently, and we were supposed to have Producer Stephanie on for that episode where we did tasting Japanese snacks, but she had sort of a incident, and I didn't want to bug her, but I think she's okay now.
She's so fine now, by the way. Yes.
I can bug her about coming on the show now. So I will. I will. I will.
Two that I'll mention, one of these almost happened, is Gene Park from the Washington Post.
Oh, yes.
We were all set to record something with him at Summer Game Fest, but he had to change his plans and couldn't come at the last second. And he's somebody that we just like a lot and is super, you know, well-informed and plugged in. So just think he'd be a really great conversation to have.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I'm going to start working on when I get back is Jeff Grubb, who we talk about all the time, and
spin those rumor mills.
He's one of the few, you know, people who gets information that I do trust, and I just think it would be interesting to hear him talk about, you know, his not his secrets, but like how does he approach, you know, getting information? How does he feel? When does he feel comfortable sharing it? How does he do that? Because again, there's a big difference between him and some random guy on the internet who's gonna, you know, get whacked by a Nintendo ninja.
Yeah.
And he's also, he's a really cool guy who we've known for a long time too. So
yeah, totally.
I think those are two that we can hopefully get on sooner than later. So I guess all of these are actually all pretty like practical and realistic of that sort.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been a little while since we had a guest last. We had Rob obviously from Localization for Zelda
Week. That was
but
really fun.
We're due.
We're due for another guest for
That's
sure.
That's the answer.
You will be back soon enough, and we will get back on track with the guests.
That's right. Dennis has the next question. Hi, Kit and Krista. I recently watched the Nintendo Direct at the E3 from 2013. During the presentation, they announced that participating Best Buys were going to have demos of the games that got showcased during E3, including Mario Kart 8, Super Mario 3D World, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, and The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker HD. I remember going to a participating Best Buy to try out these games and having a great time. Before Smash Bros. Ultimate was released, they had a demo event at a Best Buy during the summer of 2018, where I drove 45 minutes to the Best Buy that was hosting it. Same year, during the holiday season, I drove 40 minutes to a shopping mall that had a Nintendo showcase booth set up inside the mall, where people got to play Nintendo games highlighted for the holidays, including Smash Ultimate before it was released. Despite the long drive, I enjoyed going to these events. I was wondering if you know what the planning process is to host these events at a Best Buy or a shopping mall. Were you two involved in any aspect of it? How does the location get decided to host these events? Thank you for all your content.
Oh, yes. The retail events. The retail events, like at a Best Buy, were mainly done through a different team at Nintendo. They were called the Retail Strategy Team. And they would do a lot of the they had partnerships, obviously, with the retailers that were selling Nintendo products. And when there was like an occasion to do some sort of event, usually they were able to work with that retailer to help to host it or help to plan it. And that was during the phase, I think, where it was like a big – company motto almost, or company directive, to like get as many people to play Nintendo games after they were announced as possible. So there was like this big deal about like announcing a game at a time like E3 and then getting as many people the chance to go hands-on with those games as possible. So that was, you know, those events were happening at a time where that was very important to Nintendo. And so I think that's why you saw such an influx of those events. And then other times we would work with our experiential marketing team is what they were called, but they would be the ones putting on like those holiday mall events during the year to get people a chance to try some Nintendo games or get hands-on with games. And it's all for promotional purposes. Usually those games are not, you know, new games or it's not new announcements, but more so just a chance for people to see Nintendo, you know, at a place where they're buying stuff and then, you know, have something fun to try out.
Yeah, the Best Buy thing started in, you know, as a Wii, as an E3 activity during the Wii U days. And it was a good insight that it's good to just let people play the games. That's how you get the best reactions, specifically to Nintendo, because they aren't always, you know, flashy visually. I think they had an issue with like not having enough locations for it to really, really deeply accomplish the goal. Like there were always like maybe, you know, a dozen or 20 stores around the country. And even for the people who went to them, like you could only play it for a little bit before they had to kick you off and move you off to somebody else. So there was a good idea there that I just didn't think could completely capitalize on it. And yeah, they've done, like, I think the Nintendo World Championships had a big retail qualifying event. A lot of the times it comes down to like, can the store accommodate that sort of thing? Sometimes the store is a little too small for it, or they're not staffed to do that kind of thing. So that's why some stores get chosen and not others. And then, yeah, like Krista was saying, like the mall thing is something that's a little bit different that they will do probably annually. You'll probably see another one come along as we get closer to the fall or the holidays, because it, you know, matches up well with people who are doing holiday shopping. That's something they've been doing for a long time. So, yeah, there's a lot of different ways they get the games out there. Cerulean Dragon has the next question. Hey, Kit and Krista. And this question has a visual that you can go into the Discord if you'd like to see it. Recently, I was scrolling Twitter and came across this sponsored promoted tweet by IGN. And I'll go ahead and read the tweet now. Inspired by Firesmith Flame Grilled Chicken, here are four recipes you just can't live without in The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, presented by @Boar's Head. And there's a picture of Link with a chef's hat on. I know content creators do similar content, streaming games to get sponsors and all that, but it feels different coming from a big company as a Twitter advertisement. Do you think Nintendo approves of this use of their IP? Do you think they'll take action or let it be to avoid the scrutiny? Do you think this is the result of how they let Animal Crossing New Horizons be used for some limited advertising purposes during the pandemic? Just curious to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
This is one of those things that I feel like is, if you don't ask Nintendo for permission to do this and you just do it on your own with like available released IP, you know, Tears of the Kingdom is a game that is out. These visuals are visuals that are out publicly. And so if you don't ask for permission, you just do it. Chances are Nintendo won't come after you. But if you try to do it the right way and you ask Nintendo to grant you an IP license, which I have facilitated many at my time there, and it's a nightmare, they will say no, most likely.
Yeah.
Or they will try to like draw out the process of giving you that license for like years. And it's awful. So I think IGN just went ahead and did this deal and took a calculated risk with a game that's out publicly and very popular. So it's harder for them to have like a claim against.
Yeah. It was one of those things where, yeah, like you were saying, if you tried to do it the right way and ask for permission, you will absolutely not be able to do it. But if you just do it, then you'll be fine. You know, there is also this thing with IGN here where IGN is probably one of the most important, you know, media partners and advertising partners that Nintendo has. So they do need to be careful about how harshly they stomp something like this out or think about even doing something like that. It would definitely make them think twice versus some other outlets doing it. And I mean, there are things that, you know, for example, IGN, like on their YouTube channel, they'll just take a trailer that somebody has on their own channel, rip it, put their watermark on it, and post it on their channel, which Nintendo didn't love that. And it was something that would get discussed of like, well, what do we do about this? And ultimately like nothing happened because it's like, it's not worth it to have that, you know, potentially agitating conversation with them. It's also, you know, potentially, you know, a different audience that you're reaching that isn't on your channel. IGN's YouTube channel is actually like twice as big as Nintendo's. Right, so it probably is. But yeah, there were oftentimes a lot of conversations around these things where somebody didn't like it, but you just end up looking the other way because it's not, it's not worth it.
And IGN does have a leg to stand on here. So
yeah,
they probably know that. And so they know that they can take this risk,
right.
not even really a risk, but sort of do this and not be penalized for it. So
yeah. Tuscoop's next, a Kit and Krista. Usually for E3s, Nintendo has announced their direct plans far ahead of time. However, in this post-E3 world, it seems they're holding off until after all the Summer Game Fest season dies down. Why do you think this is? Do you think there's ever a chance Nintendo joins back in with the fold and enters the same week as every other company again?
I don't, honestly, think. I think that they are probably relishing that, you know, with E3 no longer this thing that kind of hold everybody to a particular schedule. The pressure of breaking through the week of E3 among all of the other big gaming companies and their announcements is now gone. And now Nintendo can do what they want to do whenever they want. They have such a great, powerful vehicle with Nintendo Direct. They know that no matter what timing they put out a Direct, it's going to do huge numbers. It's going to reach a lot of people. So there's really no need for them to get into that space with all the other companies. Now, do I want to see them play nice with everybody else? Yes. I think it's great when we have like this big industry moment where everybody's represented and we as fans get to see everything and get excited for everything. But will they do it? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that this is something that they ultimately like and makes a lot of sense to have your own moment to do your thing that is not cluttered with, you know, all the comparisons that come from being at an E3. Not to say that Nintendo never enjoyed good outcomes at an E3, but it was something that I think they begrudgingly were a part of because there weren't a lot of alternatives and they were very locked into that and they had a rhythm of doing that. But now that that's gone, I think, you know, you'll see them staying away and, you know, thinking of other ways to showcase their games. Maybe even the timing gets different the further we get away from this. Because yeah, a lot of times there was a concern of like, our games don't look as good, just, you know, visually the just straight comparison thing that everybody does doesn't always work in our favor. So I think they just like this aspect of being apart.
Yeah. Timing wise though, that June timing is still critical for everybody because you have to get your announcements out before we roll into the fall and the holiday season. If you have games coming out in those time frames, you need to announce it in the summer. So that is still, I think that June timing still remains pretty important for everybody. So I can see them sticking there, but just not, you know, with everybody else in the Summer Game Fest timing.
Vidge Michter's next. This is an interesting one.
Okay.
How often have either of you dealt with being called endearing nicknames by coworkers, acquaintances, or people you don't know well? I personally find it somewhat inappropriate for coworkers and our clientele to be calling me a cutesy nickname that would be more acceptable coming from a parent or extremely close friend. But I feel I might have been being too harsh. My usual reaction has been a firm, "I ask you not to call me fill-in-the-blank nickname, thank you," in as polite a tone as possible, but maybe there's a better way of doing it. How say you?
Oh, this is interesting. I wonder, are you very young in your workplace? I'm just wondering if this is the reason why you're being called
a cutie. Hazing?
Well, it could, or like, what if you work with just much older people and they, you know, are more used to that culture of calling younger coworkers by a nickname, like, hey, sport. Hey, kiddo. Like, hey, I honestly wouldn't like that either. I think it's a little bit like, it doesn't set a good precedent for you, because you want to be treated as an equal in your workplace. You want to, you know, have a certain level of authority. And when that happens to you, I think it might make you feel like no one takes you seriously. You're just some kid, right? Which is not great. I think it's very reasonable for you to say, you know, don't call me that in a polite way. I don't think that you should just like not say anything if it bothers you and just like take it. That's not good. You can even give them an alternative to call you. Like, if you could please call me X, that would be great. Thanks. I think that would be good. I do have a funny nickname story. When this was like the head of marketing at Nintendo, he did not remember anybody's name. And he would just go around calling all the girls Missy. And it was really, I did not like that. And I knew it's because he didn't know my name. So he would like walk into my cubicle and put his hand on my shoulder and be like, hey, Missy, how's it going? It's like, what the hell?
And he absolutely did not know the difference between you and producer Stephanie.
That's true. He mixed all of us up because we're Asian. Not great, but I have dealt with my share of inappropriate or like just kind of uncomfortable nicknames in the workplace, where it does make you feel like you are not treated with respect. So I do think that you can politely tell them to not call you that.
Yeah, I think if you consistently stick with that, people will get the point. If they don't, they're jerks, and you may be in a toxic workplace. I've certainly heard it all. Kit Kat, kitten, all of that stuff. It's all dumb. I've heard it all. It's not even creative.
Your name is very creative. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, if you just kind of stick to that, or you don't really engage with it, usually that stuff goes away.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully people get the point. Because that's not fun when it happens. Yeah.
No.
Last question is from Zroid. Here's a hypothetical scenario. And this is another fun one, so get it.
Oh, I'm so ready.
Together, you both grab a table for dinner at an all-you-can-eat restaurant of your choice. What type of cuisine is it, and what is your plan of attack for the evening? For example, are you each ordering or grabbing food strictly for yourselves, or doing so as a team? Is there some pattern to what you get, such as appetizers, main courses, etc., or do you just dive in and have whatever tickles your fancy at any given moment? Feel free to answer this in as little or as much detail as you like.
Oh, so many details are coming your way. I do love a seafood buffet.
Mm.
Like, there is a really good one in Las Vegas at the Caesars Hotel called Bacchanal, which is like this crazy seafood buffet.
Is that specific seafood?
Yeah, it's specifically, I mean, they have other stuff there, but their main thing is like king crab legs.
Okay.
And yes, you just get like 45 plates of king crab legs, and you've like eaten you've gotten your money's worth, right?
Right.
But yeah, I'm for buffets, I'm a eat the expensive stuff kind of girl. Like, if you take me to a buffet and there's like seafood and like caviar and like all that, I'm gonna eat that. I'm not filling up on like nonsense items like bread or like salad. No, I'm going to eat 45 plates of crab legs and sushi, like the expensive things. So yeah, that's my answer. I would definitely love to, anytime anyone wants to go to a seafood buffet with me, I'm here for you. I'll go with you. I'll help you.
Are you getting things strictly for yourself, or would you get stuff for me as well?
Oh, share plates. We can just have
two plates of crab legs.
Family style. I am good at making the crab dippy sauces.
Mm. Oh.
Yes.
What are those?
I'm a saucier. Well, you mean there's like tons of different ways. You can,
butter?
There's butter, but there's also like the chili sauce that you can dip in, or the ginger sauce. That's very nice. Or even like just salt and pepper. with a little oil, a little lime juice.
Of course, I mean, it's no secret, but yeah, don't waste your time on like fillery stuff.
Don't eat the rice and bread. That's dumb.
I slightly differ with you in that yes, you should go for whatever big ticket item you're interested in, but do save a bit of room to just sort of dabble and try some stuff out and see if there's something that's like really good. Cause you might find something that's really good that you didn't expect that is not like a plate full of caviar.
Caviar.
But you may end up really liking. So in that case, then that's you can go to town on that.
That's true.
Yeah.
Unless that thing is like a piece of bread, then don't do that because that's lame. Oh, also save room for dessert because usually those buffets have really beautiful like dessert spreads. And that always is fun at the end.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. Ending on a high note of stuffing ourselves. I'm starving. I'm ready for lunch.
Well, you've been eating basically like you're at an all-you-can-eat buffet for the last 7 days.
It's true.
10 days.
As I've said, so I'm still in Taiwan. The go-to activity here is eating.
Eating.
And it's okay because, you know, I've been checking my steps. Like I have been just blowing away my, you know, step count.
Yeah.
For the last week that
and
I've been here.
You're sweating it out. You're like basically in a 24-hour sauna.
It's so hot. I've been sweating so much. So I don't feel like I'm like out of whack with it. I feel like it's balancing
out
pretty well.
Absolutely. You can probably eat more, honestly. You probably eat.
Yeah, right. But now I've been in this air-conditioned room recording this and a podcast and other things for 3 hours. So I'm ready to go out into the world and eat my way through it.
Yes, do it.
Let's do it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.